This is WHTC in Holland. It's time now for Talk of the Town, the program in which you, the listeners, participate with your telephone calls. Our guest this morning is Attorney Lee Fisher, and Lee is with the Ottawa County Prosecuting Attorney's Office. Good morning, Lee.
Good morning, Duke.
And he is serving in the Holland Court, and the Holland branch, I guess, of the Prosecutor's Court. The court branch, forget it. Okay.
Well, what we've got is, you know, we've got the three different district courts in Ottawa County, and then our office, the prosecutor's office, is actually split up into three different branches, one in Grand Haven, one in Holland, and one out in West Olive.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually work out of the Holland office, Holland branch of the prosecutor's office.
The cases that come through the Holland court are in your hands.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So if you have any legal questions, you can give us a call, 395-1450. Our line is open here, and you can talk directly to the attorney if you'd like to. We would like to talk a little bit about the sobriety court, which has become quite an important part of our local court, right?
Yes, it really has. It's a program in the district court that continues to grow. Currently now in Holland, we have two sobriety courts that are functioning, and we've got 60 to 70 people in that program right now. And it has just recently expanded to where Judge Bunce up in Grand Haven, who used to be a guest on your program quite often when he worked in the prosecutor's office, he is starting his own sobriety court up there as well with about 30 more participants. So in the district courts for Ottawa County, we will have probably 90 to 100 people participating in the sobriety court program. And that's a program that, in order to qualify for that program, you have to have been convicted of your second drunk driving offense. And what happens there is you are placed on a 24-month probation, and the objective there is to get people clean and sober. And people that come into the program, that's what they want to do. They want to get clean and sober. So there's a really big treatment component. Treatment is the main emphasis of the program.
Mm-hmm.
You get a lot more treatment as far as your alcohol problems and so forth, and maybe what leads to your alcohol problems, than you would if you were just on a regular probation.
Now, is this a volunteer thing that you have to say, yes, I will do this?
Yes, the people that go into the program have to agree to go into the program.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, they would just be placed on regular probation, regular court probation. So hopefully what we're getting there is people who have a desire to become clean and sober and discontinue their use of alcohol and of course, discontinue the driving under the influence of alcohol, which, of course, is a huge public safety concern, and that's what we're trying to accomplish, is to improve public safety and help these people get clean and sober.
Can you see them making progress as they go along if they enter the program?
You really can. With most of the participants, the great majority of them, you can see them making progress as they go on through the program. And that is really, even as a prosecutor, I know it's a very rewarding thing for the judges to see that, for the treatment providers that are part of the program, for the probation officers and the surveillance workers, all the people who are part of the sobriety court team, which prosecutor is also part of that team. It's very rewarding. It really is to see people who are able to become clean and sober, get on and be more productive with their lives, and just make that overall improvement in their lives and hopefully not come back through the system again.
And get control of their lives, more or less.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Our number is 395-1450. If you have a question for the attorney here, give us a call. Our line is open for you. And this has been going on quite a while, I believe, the sobriety court, right? How many years now?
Yeah, the program's been very successful. I would say, I don't know the exact year it started. I know in the circuit court, the program started back in 2004, 2005.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the district court programs were right around that same time, maybe started a little bit before that. But the program has been very successful. It's been something that we want to continue, and actually it is growing, which shows that it has been successful, and it is something that we would like to keep going and expand wherever we can.
It may put you out of work.
Huh?
It may put you out of work.
Well, I don't know about that. We could put 90 to 100 people into this program and the way it stands right now, and that's just a really fairly small fraction of the number of people who actually come through the court system charged with drunk driving every year.
What types of cases do you usually get in on, Lee?
Well, in my position, we have me and three other lawyers here in Holland. I'll just speak to the Holland attorneys.
Yeah.
And all of us handle cases ranging from misdemeanor cases, which could be, you know, as low as like a trespass or a retail fraud, you know, shoplifting type of case, all the way up to we could handle homicide cases, serious assault cases, criminal sexual conduct cases, serious felony cases.
Mm-hmm.
So all of us in the office handle a very wide range of cases.
Yeah.
So we handle both the misdemeanor district court docket, and then we also will all have a circuit court docket. And then in addition, I'm part of the sobriety court team that works with Judge Jonas, Judge Canall, the treatment providers, and so forth. And we meet on a biweekly basis to staff and go over each of the participants' progress over the previous 2 weeks. And then those participants come into court every 2 weeks and see the judge, update on their progress, and we see how they're doing and just see how they're progressing through the program.
Okay, I have a call here.
Okay.
Good morning. You're online with our guest.
Yeah, a friend of mine got hit October the 6th of this year. The guy that hit him, they didn't know who it was, but they do now. And he had an invalid driver's license. That's why he didn't stop. It was a hit run. He hit him on his bicycle. How come it takes so long to the prosecutor to do anything about it? And the officer told my friend that it'd be a while. And he went to the police station to get the report on 8th Street. And he said it'd be a while. How come? I hang up and listen.
Thank you.
Okay, well, it sounds like you're talking about a very specific case, which, you know, I'm sad to hear that your friend was hit on a bicycle. But it's really a case I don't know, have any personal firsthand knowledge about right now, but I can tell you the way these things generally work through the system is, first of all, we have the accident that gets reported where your friend was hit, and that was a hit and run, and that is fairly common, especially when we have a number of people in the county who are driving around without valid licenses or with suspended licenses or whatever the reason may be why they don't want to stick around the scene of an accident. So the first thing you've got to do at that point is determine who was driving the car that struck your friend. And, you know, if you're lucky enough to have a license plate number or description of the car, sometimes it can take quite a while to track down who was actually driving the car. And the police will do that investigation. Sometimes that investigation can take quite a while to figure out who it was that was actually driving, and then to determine whether or not there's enough evidence to actually charge them with a crime. Once they get charged with a crime, depending on how long the investigation took, then they would come to court where they would be arraigned in front of a judge, and the whole court process starts as far as the arraignment, the setting of bond, the pretrial process, possibly the appointment of an attorney, and setting the case for trial and the whole pretrial process, which can take up to a few months. So depending on how long the police investigation took and how long it took for that case to get to court, it certainly could be upwards of a couple of months to anywhere from, say, 2 to 6 months to get that case actually resolved. And that's just that's the system that we have, and we work the best within that system that we can.
Okay. Good morning. You're online with our guest.
Yeah. They finally knew who did it, and there was a witness to the accident. My friends, we got hit on his bicycle, hit and run. They know who did it now. Can they file a civil suit? And maybe you can explain to the people that don't know what a civil suit is. And I hang up and listen.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, certainly the hit and run and driving on an invalid or suspended license, those would both be criminal charges that he would be facing in our court here. Now, that's on the criminal side of things. Now, the civil suit that your friend may choose to file against this person is a civil matter that is not criminal, and where your friend would probably most likely be suing for damages, things like medical care that he may have needed to get those costs covered, any other types of damages he may have suffered, he's actually suing then probably for money. And that's what a civil suit is all about. And our office, as prosecutors, we do not get involved in civil suits at all. We merely handle the criminal side of things. We enforce the laws of the state of Michigan and take those cases to court and trial if need be.
Okay. Good morning. You're online with our guest.
Yeah, he kind of answered my question as he was talking.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Why it took so long, because I can't wait until the girl that hit my husband gets sentenced. And that doesn't come up till February 4.
Okay. Okay.
And that was in July, so that's over 6 months. That's
yeah, you know, and you know, it'd be nice if we could move things along quicker, but you know, there's a lot of cases going on. There's real heavy court dockets in all of our courts, and we do the best we can to move them along as fast as we can. But there's so many variables that go into every different case that it's really hard to say why one case might get through the system in 2 months and why
mm-hmm.
another case might take 2 years or something to get through
mm-hmm.
the system.
I understand.
You know, there's just so many variables, and it's hard to talk about every one of those possible variables on the air here.
Well, she goes in front of Judge Jonah.
Okay.
So right. I hear she's excellent. So
she is. Excellent judge.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Well, when a prosecutor takes a case into court, he wants to be reasonably certain that he's going to win.
Yeah, what happens is, you know, the police will do their investigation, and when they complete that investigation, they will submit that information to our office
mm-hmm.
along with a request for a warrant. If they're requesting a warrant based on their investigation, they send that to our office. Then we are the ones that decide, based on that investigation, whether there's enough evidence there to prove the case beyond a reasonable doubt. If we decide that there is, if we believe in our opinion as professionals, as prosecutors, that we can prove that case beyond a reasonable doubt, we will authorize a charge. If we find that there may be some things missing or some other items that we would like to have them investigate after we review the case, we can send that investigation back to them for more investigation. And sometimes that creates a delay. In getting a case to court. Or if they submit a report to us and it is complete and we believe there's enough information, we will authorize the charge. Now, the other thing we have to do as prosecutors is sometimes we have to say, look, we just don't think we can prove this beyond a reasonable doubt. We may suspect the person did it. We may think they did it. But can we prove it beyond a reasonable doubt? Sometimes we have to say no, and we decline to authorize charges as well. We don't just rubber stamp everything the police send to us.
Good morning. You're online with our guest.
Yeah, while you're holding this person in jail, who pays for that jail time?
Well, that cost is paid for by the county. I don't know the exact rate and the scale and so forth, but I do know that people who are held in the jail are charged fees out there for, I think there's some sort of, there's booking fees. I think there may even be a daily fee that they have to pay for staying in the jail. But I honestly don't know what that is, but I do know that the prisoner is responsible for some of those costs. I don't know how much, but whatever they don't pay certainly falls on the taxpayers.
Because, see, if it takes, you know, a couple months or more like that, 6 months, you know.
That can be quite expensive.
Sure,
yeah.
It's a very expensive proposition to run a jail and to run a court system. Yes.
Right.
That's what our yours and my taxes go for, is to pay. You know, to have those services, to have those things available to us.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Well, it's a matter of public safety, and you have to pay for that.
It is, yeah. Public safety does not come free. It doesn't.
But if you
be nice if it did.
If you hold somebody in jail like that, you have to have a reason for holding them.
Yes, you've got to have at least a probable cause to hold them on the charge. Probable cause to believe that they committed the crime.
Yeah.
There has to be. That's the threshold that would allow you to hold somebody in jail. And that's a lower threshold than the actual beyond a reasonable doubt standard that you would have to show once you actually get that person to trial. You would have to prove the case against them beyond a reasonable doubt. But to get them held, to get them arrested and held in jail, it's only a probable cause standard, which is much lower.
But usually, are they any time during that time eligible for getting out of jail on bail?
Oh, sure. Everybody's got the constitutional right to have a reasonable bond set, a reasonable bail
mm-hmm.
set, so that they can get out of jail. And there's a number of factors that go into that the judge looks at in setting bail for people. They look at their work history, where they live, their permanency of residence. They look at their prior criminal history. They look at the actual crime itself, whether how serious the crime is. There's a number of factors that go into the bail amount that is set by the court. You could have on a simple retail fraud case, which is shoplifting, you could have the court could set a bond of $100. For a murder case, serious assault, you could have bonds of $50,000 or more, or sometimes for murder cases, the judge will deny bond, which is allowable in a
right.
murder case. the judge will say no bond. I'm denying bond. So you will have to sit in jail and await your trial.
Either no bond or they'll set it so high that they probably
right.
cannot make bail.
$1 million, $2 million, whatever. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Interesting. 395-1450 is our number if you'd like to talk to our guest this morning. Maybe you have a question about something you have experienced in the courts. I haven't experienced anything in the courts for a long, long time, I'm happy to say.
That's a good thing.
But you never know. You never know. 395-1450, and we'll take a moment out for a word here, and then we'll be right
back. Call Quicken Loans today at 800-QUICKEN or go to quickenloans.com. That number again is 800-QUICKEN.
Important terms and conditions apply. Call us for cost information. Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50.
Good morning. You're online with our guest. Hello.
Yes, I have a question for the judge.
Okay.
A third offense, drunk driving, is considered a felony. I'm just curious if that can get expunged from your record.
Actually, I'm an assistant prosecutor. I'm not the judge. I do appreciate the promotion, but I'm just an assistant prosecutor. But I think I can answer that question for you. That a third offense felony drunk driving most likely would not be expunged, and it would certainly never be taken off a person's record totally. Even if you were able to get that expunged from the circuit court record, it's always going to remain on your driving record. There's always going to be a record of it with the Secretary of State. They will not expunge that from your record at all.
So, like on a job application, you'd have to say that you are convicted of a felony, or that wouldn't go on like your record.
No, that is certainly a felony offense, and for any job application to ask that specific question, have you ever been convicted of a felony? You would have to indicate yes, you were convicted of a felony, and then you could state what it was if you wanted to. But that is a felony conviction, yes.
And that can't be taken off your record.
Not, there's no way that I can see that would ever be totally taken off of anybody's record.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Just to expound on that a little bit, if somebody were to do a background check, let's just say you answered the question no because you thought it had been removed from your record. If somebody did a background check and were to run even your driving history, it would show up there,
mm-hmm.
which probably wouldn't go over real well with your prospective employer or whoever was doing the background check.
Wouldn't do very anything good for your application.
No.
All right, 395-1450 is our number here, and if you'd like to talk to our guest this morning, and our line is open. And how many cases roughly do we run through here in a day's time?
Well, in a day's time, it varies from day to day. Just this morning, for example, this morning is what we call final pretrial day down in Holland District Court.
Okay.
And all of the cases that are currently pending, that have been in the system, that are coming up for jury trial, are being dealt with today in Holland District Court.
Mm-hmm.
So we actually have a hallway full of defendants and their families out there. We've got three or four of the prosecutors upstairs handling files with probably up to a dozen defense attorneys. We've got the city attorneys up there for Holland City, Zeeland City, and they're probably dealing with literally hundreds of cases this morning between the hours of 8:30 in the morning and noon. Well, I should say 8:30 in the morning and 2 o'clock this afternoon. Well, there will be hundreds of cases being dealt with today, trying to get as many of these cases resolved as we can.
Yeah.
And if we can't get them resolved, then whatever is left will go to jury selection tomorrow.
So they have to have everybody together. All the witnesses
right.
have to be there. And
right. This final pretrial day happens once a month. On a typical day in court, our office will handle anywhere from, a half a dozen to maybe 20 cases per day in court between the morning and afternoon. Some of those are as simple as pretrial conferences where you go up and you meet with the attorneys, you talk about the charge, whether their client wants a trial or not, whether you can work out any kind of plea agreement. And you try to get the case resolved. If you can't, then it moves on towards jury selection. With the felony cases, we have what are called pre-preliminary examinations, where it's the first opportunity for defendant and prosecutor to get together and talk about the case. If the case moves on from that point, if there's no resolution of the case gets set for a preliminary examination. And that's actually a court hearing that could last anywhere from a half an hour to all day or
mm-hmm.
longer in court. It's a preliminary hearing to determine whether there's probable cause to believe the person committed the offense. If the court finds that there is probable cause, the case will then get bound over to circuit court for trial. So mostly what we do is pretrial conferences in the misdemeanor cases. preliminary examinations in the felony cases. And as I said, we could have anywhere from, you know, half a dozen to maybe even a couple of dozen per day, depending on the docket, how heavy the schedule is, you know, just basically what's going on from day to day.
If you get a plea agreement, that would cut the time.
Yeah, that does cut the time down. You know, it cuts the cost of prosecuting the whole case down dramatically. You know, and those costs include court costs, you know, police officers costs, defense attorneys, what you have to pay them as far as, you know, the number of hours they spend on a case. It does cut the cost dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to bring a jury in and pay the jurors to come in, all of those things.
Okay, 395-1450 is our number. I want to take a moment out here for a weather word, and do we have a call coming in? No, I guess not at the moment. All right. The weather is brought to you by the Farmhouse Restaurant in Zealand with 13 delicious dinners under $10. And our forecast here is partly cloudy with a high of 22 degrees today, cloudy tonight with a low of 17, and tomorrow a chance of afternoon rain showers and a high of 38, Saturday a high of 39 with windy and rain conditions. And on Sunday, times with sun and clouds with a high of 35. Presently, our temperature is 13 degrees here in the beautiful morning of in the Tulip City. Give us a call, 395-1450, our number here on Talk of Town. We don't have too much time left, Lee, but anything else you wanted to cover this morning?
Well, you know, I was hoping to come in here with some crime statistics for you for the year, but our annual report is not quite done yet. So hopefully next time I come back, we can talk about crime numbers and trends, you know, what's going up, what's going down, whether the overall crime rate's going up or down. I'd like to be able to talk about that a little bit. Overall, it seems as if crime numbers are going down somewhat overall. Now, for specific categories of crime, I can't really speak to that. And the other thing that seems to me, my impression, working here in Holland, is it seems that gang activity is down.
Mm-hmm.
And that has been especially since they had the big federal bust where they arrested those 31 gang members, and they're all at various stages of working their way through the proceeding in the federal courts right now. But since those 31 people have been taken off the streets and they're going through that court process, it seems to me that gang activity in Holland has declined a great deal. And I think that's a real credit to law enforcement, to our police officers
right
here in Holland. We're talking about the Sheriff's Department. We're talking about the Holland Department of Public Safety, because they were the ones on the ground doing the work initially, and then also worked in conjunction with the federal agents from ATF and so forth that work with the federal prosecutors, and they all worked together as a team to really come together and to make those prosecutions happen. And I think that's had a big effect on our gang activity here in Holland.
Well, usually they work ahead also on something like that with the federal people as well as the local people and state people, right?
Exactly. They've had a gang task force in effect for years that includes people from the federal investigative agencies, the local investigative agencies, people from adult probation and parole, probation officers, prosecutors are all part of that task force. But you know, they've put a great deal of resources into really going after the gang issues and trying to take down the leadership of the gangs here in Holland, and I think they've done a really good job.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're at this point seeing the benefits or the results of that.
I think we've also had an effort to get people away from that life of
sure. And I'm not saying the gangs are gone. They're not
right
gone by any means. They're still out there. But I think taking away their leadership and some of the organization that they had built up over the years has really put a significant dent in their impact in the community at this point.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's hope we can continue that trend.
Yeah. Well, nobody stopped working. I know they continue to work on that. I know it still remains a priority with our law enforcement agencies.
I guess it's an important part of our law enforcement in Holland here.
It is. It is. We continue to have gangs here. We will continue to have some issues with them, but hopefully they won't be as serious as they have been in the past.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What do you do now when you go back to work? You are working on some cases today?
Well, yes. I will go back, and I'll actually go back upstairs and start dealing with some of those 100 or so cases I told you about that we're dealing with today.
Yes,
I'll be one
yes
of the four prosecutors up there dealing with those cases. But right now, my focus is on a cold case homicide that I'm working on. It's actually coming up for trial on March the 5th. It's going to start March the 5th. It's the Brinks homicide from 1987.
Yes.
The trial in that is going to start March 5. And so I'm spending a lot of time working on that, actually, right now.
Well, that should receive quite a bit of public exposure, I would think.
I would think so, at least locally. I would think it would, yeah.
And it's been on the back burner for a long, long time.
It really has. It's been a case that I really think is maybe not so much as the years go by, but a lot of people were affected by that case, a lot of people that live in the community here, and it's just sort of been a bit of a cloud hanging over the community.
Yes.
As far as, you know, that case just never having been solved and nobody ever being prosecuted on that case. So hopefully we can bring some closure to that issue.
Lee, we're out of time, and I thank you very much for being our guest today here on Talk of the Town, being willing to expose yourself to public scrutiny questions, and we wish you well on the rest of the day.
Great. Thank you. I appreciate being here.